All right, baby, let's go. I hope
Let's go.
downloading.
Barking boys minus a barking boy today.
Yeah, we had to put him down. He had a lame tooth, and so he.
We literally yeah, we
No, he's doing all right. So the fucking the crown jewel of this podcast, the man with the smoothest voice of the west of Mississippi, has found himself missing at least four teeth.
Yes.
They nearly had to rip his brain out. Apparently, some nerves got tangled. I don't really know.
Yeah, something about some, yeah, I don't know. They like split it too. I don't know. So our boy Vidith
You
is
know.
without us for this one. So me and Steven are gonna be flying by the seat of our pants.
That's not true. I'm actually quite prepared, but.
Oh, that's not what I meant. But yeah, everybody in the comments wish Vidith a happy. Tooth rippy-yatty.
And if you don't, just remember that it's going to be your fault if something goes wrong,
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
because you didn't wish him a good tooth rippy outie.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to word it just like that.
Yeah. Obviously. All right. So moving forward today, episode. Lord knows, I don't have my episode list.
Oh
I
my
got
God,
a new computer and all that.
is it 12 or 13? Oh fuck.
I honestly don't know, but it's a good one. That's what it is. And this one is going to be primarily about the Cuban Missile Crisis
Cold
and the issues
War
surrounding
times.
it. So, usually we do, I can't find quite the exact word, but more like cryptology, occult,
Oh, yeah.
That version of horror. But I really want to bring forward today the horror of man.
Men, of all the scariest things in the world, the human next to you has to be one of the scariest things.
Oh,
So.
yeah. And in this particular event, these solemn days, there were 12 of them in August of 1962, were the closest we ever came to ending civilization, at least as we know it. The Cuban Missile Crisis is widely considered the closest we ever came to an exchange between the U.S. and Soviet Union, with the aftermath, of course, would be the end of the
Obliteration,
world.
literally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we reached like the highest DEFCON level ever. It was like DEFCON 4 or something like that.
I can't remember if it goes up or down. I always forget.
I want to say DEFCON 5 is right there at it.
I thought it was five was fine, and then one is war.
It's possible. I'll look that up while
I
you're
don't know.
talking.
Yeah. And so this event takes place around the island of Cuba, but just like a little bit of a backstory. On July 16th of 1945, at approximately 5:52 in the morning, the first bomb, codenamed Trinity, went off in Alamogordo, New Mexico. And of course, we're talking about a plutonium bomb in this case, but an atomic weapon nonetheless. And that's where, you hear, "I am become death, destroyer of worlds."
What a
A
fucking
quote by Oppenheimer, who is quoting the Bhagavad Gita, a book from the Hindu religion. But that very day, in the following months, on August 6th and 9th of 1945, Hiroshima and Nagasaki were hit by Little Boy and Fat Man. And this is a story we all know.
Yeah, biggest, turning point of the war, end of the war with Japan.
It was the end of the Second World War, right? Like, we had finished off Hitler. Here's this. And all of a sudden, we apes had the ability to wipe ourselves off the fucking planet, which is something a lot of people don't consider, is that like before this time, even if shit was going bad where you were, like say you were in the middle of like the First World War and you were in the trenches just seeing your buddies' heads get blown off and you're getting gassed and all these terrible things, you knew at the end of the day, like even if your country lost, the human race would continue.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sure, they had like gas attacks and stuff like that, but
It was a
the world
world ending.
yeah, the world would still be spinning the next day. Yeah.
And so, this time in 1945, it changed. For the first time, you couldn't sit there and think, "Well, if I don't finish this mission, my son or my grandson might." No, you might not have a fucking anything left,
Yeah, I was
And
about to say.
I'm not sure what the cultural impact was. I mean, like, from the my favorite analogy is, like, we the human race is represented by a toddler. We're given a handgun, right? Like, a toddler was given a fucking handgun. And then, like, 10 years later, this guy by the name of, I already forgot it. He made the thermonuclear weapon. Good God. Feynman? Is that who?
Thermonuclear.
Edward Teller.
Yeah,
Teller. Father of the hydrogen bomb. Yep. Richard Feynman was a physicist. I got that wrong. My apologies. But eventually, Edward Teller made what we know is the hydrogen bomb, and that's modern nukes, thermonukes, right?
Yeah.
And that's like taking the pistol away from the toddler and handing him a fucking loaded M16. Like, we accidentally created this world where, like, the fear of destruction is just ingrained into our day-to-day lives. Like, I mean, I think about it because I think about this kind of shit all the time. But most people I talk to don't, like, sit here and fucking consider that, like, we're 23 minutes from, like, death. And that number comes from, like, the 70s when Nixon said it to the press. He's like, in fucking 29 minutes, I can kill, you know, 140 million people.
Which is crazy. And, I mean, they also had that instance of in Soviet Union during the Cold War where they had thought, I don't know what told them, but they had thought that America...
It was a computer glitch.
Yeah, and they had thought that we had fired nukes at us, and they were given the word to fire their nuclear weapons at us. They were given 100% go ahead, hit the button.
So
fire.
you're talking about Stanislav Petrov.
Yeah, and that guy, he was like,
no, he saved the world. He was like single handedly.
Yeah, he was like, wait a minute, I don't think this is right.
And what's incredible is his logic was super fucking sound. Like, so what happened was he was sitting, and they had these all over the world, both American and Soviet, and probably some European and whatever else. But they were little radar stations, right? And yeah. It was just like a little bunker, and it had a radar attached, and it said, hey, if you see inbound missiles, you press this button, and it ends the world, right? Like, it sends our missiles in retaliation for getting missiles shot at us. And that's a pretty reasonable thing to have, right? Like, yeah. A little bunker that says if we're getting shot at, we want to shoot back. Okay. Fair enough, I guess.
Yeah.
Although we can talk here shortly about the ethics of, like, if you're getting nuked, just don't do anything and just die, and that way at least the human race gets to go on. But that's not the point. So this guy Stanislav Petrov saw, like, one inbound missile, and, like, the thing that I read that he thought to himself was, like, well, if they were gonna do it, they would have done it with all of them. So yeah. I think this might not be right. And he just held it, man. And he single-handedly saved the world.
That's a crazy thought, because America would fire everything we had. Let's be honest. America
he died in 2017, by the
really?
Way.
Really? Damn.
Yep. He's dead. But how many level heads do we have like that these days, right? You hope plenty, but do you know?
Yeah, you did. I don't know. I'm losing faith in society. Anyways. But, yeah. Oh, you know, there was that incident, and of course... There was one incident of, I guess this is going more into the testing of thermonuclear and nuclear weapons. There was an incident where America was testing in the Pacific. And
Castle Bravo, yeah.
Yeah, and they dropped one on I believe it was a carrier. It was an aircraft carrier. And we dropped a nuke on the aircraft carrier to see the effects of it. Well, they didn't realize how big the explosion was going
to
be.
There's a video of this one I love to watch. So it's two times the size of the predicted explosion. And so whenever they test nukes, there's like a big circle, right? Like they give it a wide berth, and there's a bunch of like little carriers and destroyers and battleships. And like they're, you know, they surround it, and so they can get a bunch of data. And there's a bunch of like weather balloons and shit in the sky. And so we're like trying to capture all this information because like, I want to remind you, this isn't an exact science. So, we're trying to get all this data, and dude, it goes off, and like within seconds, the ship's like closest to the edge. You're just like kind of tossed.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Okay. So it went off March 1st. Sorry, I can't fucking read. March 1st, 1954. Whenever it went off, it was about 1,000 times more powerful than the atomic bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima. The sixth largest nuclear explosion in history. And what was so crazy about that, it radiated like all those ships around. But not only did they consider that, but also there was an island with a group of, it was like a tribe of people that had never seen technology before. And they radiated all of these humans, all these people on this island. And, they killed a whole bunch of them. They killed a whole bunch of fucking sea life. It was insane. It's kind of crazy, you know, the nuclear bomb side of things.
Well, like they honestly didn't know if it would ignite the atmosphere or not. So the Soviet Tsar bomb, the big one,
yeah.
They wanted to do one twice as big as that. So one was 500 million megatons, 500 million megatons. And the other one would have been a billion megatons, or maybe 50 and 100. But anyways, these are like in unfathomably large numbers. And they're like, dude, we're going to like hold off a little bit so we don't fucking light the air on fire. Like that was the concern. Like,
okay. So there was like, of course, other than, you know, the big downside of the tribe and in the fishing, or the fish and the sea
also
life.
Imagine if that happens to us on like a planetary scale, like some alien is just like,
I want
to
test
out this new fucking bomb. And then we are just eliminated from like universal history in a,
whoops,
in a split
second. That was a little
second.
Too big.
All right, we'll try to tone it down for
next
time.
There's a couple of aliens sitting behind their ship with a couple of bush lights just like, hey, fuck yeah.
Oops. You got to imagine someone on any one of those boats was lit, right? Like,
oh, yeah. No, you had to
someone
be.
Was trashed.
But during that incident, there was a Japanese fishing boat that was off the coast, Lucky Dragon number 5. Came into direct contact with the fallout, caused many of the crew to grow ill due to radiation sickness. One of them died 6 months later from the radiation sickness. And another one had some long-term issues that they had from the radiation poisoning. Some of them developed cancer and other deformities from that. But they gave him compensation of about $60,000 in like today's money, and they were given Hikabaku status. What is this? Oh, what the fuck? Oh, so they were given the same status as the people that had gotten injured from the original atomic bomb from Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So I guess it's
Hiroshima
just,
and Nagasaki.
Yeah, I pronounced that one all kinds of fucked up. Yeah, I guess it's like a designation of people that I guess they get, you know, damaged from like radiation and stuff like that. They also had the same thing with the Fukushima plant. But yeah. It was kind of crazy.
Just a side note, that one's like just fucking hilarious to me. You're telling me all the fail-safes failed? Like
literally all of them. Well, huh? And it's also sad about the Fukushima plant because, like, the amount of people
that's...
Let's
not go too
into that
one. Oh, yeah,
yeah.
That one's its own tragic tale.
Yeah, Fukushima we could do an episode on, but never know.
Anyways, so we have created things that can uniquely destroy the world, right? Knock us back to the Stone Age. Do whatever, right? And this is arguably... not a good thing, well, you know, at least in my opinion. But now we have this power. And to get to the event we want to talk about today, this Cuban Missile Crisis, we got to do just like a little more history. And I just kind of want to give you the state of the relationship between the United States and the Soviet Union.
They were best
and
friends.
And the United States and Cuba. Well, vaguely. So... What happened in 1960, which was 2 years before this thing, is John F. Kennedy, of the John F. Kennedy getting shot in the face fame, was elected president. And the CIA and other people convinced him in that next year to attempt what was called the Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba. And what that was we trained a bunch of Cubans to go over there and fight and take their country back, like become revolutionaries.
Yeah, because we were trying our absolute best to get rid of Fidel Castro.
Well, so we had this like wonderful hemisphere of the world where we weren't fucked by anybody forever until Cuba's like, and now we're Soviet. It happened right under our noses. We were busy fighting the Second World War, and then, oh shit, our next door neighbor is the thing we sworn to hate for whatever reason, right? Like, the only reason us and the Soviet Union didn't get along was not ideology. It's because we were the two biggest kids on the block, and nobody wants to like fight for power, right? Like,
yeah.
A fucking Egyptian from the old civilization would have understood why we hated each other. They couldn't, they didn't know what communism was. They didn't know what fucking, you know, democracy was. Those are good placeholders, but the two biggest kids on the block don't get along, right? Like, this, it's the story of humanity.
Yeah.
So anyways, we had one of the big kids, little brothers, right in our backyard. And so we came up with this plan to train up CIA Cubans. The CIA to train up Cubans, excuse me, and then send them in, you know, start a revolution, make Cuba democracy, right? Like, okay, cool. Well, Kennedy, not only being the youngest president, was also quite naive, at least at the time this happened. And what the U.S. military-industrial complex, the military leadership, the CIA, the NSA, whatever, they all grouped together and said, hey, it would be really wise to do this. And then when it failed, which it did, the Cubans landed on the beach with all their American weapons, and they got shot in like 20 fucking minutes. It was an insanely quick
And they literally were like, hey, this is American-backed, and they were like, you know, what the fuck?
Yeah, hey, guys. Excuse me. Fucked up. And so they're like, all right, well, now we got to finish up, give them the 1-2 punch, and go to war with Cuba, right? Like, that's just the right thing to do, all these military leaders said. And Kennedy was like, fuck no.
Yeah.
And this is what led, in my opinion, to this, like, character change where Kennedy, like, really took charge. And I don't want to say grew a spine, you know, there's a whole thing on Kennedy, but like he became a much stronger leader after getting fucked over by the people he thought he could trust, right? And that's kind of how we had Robert Kennedy as the Attorney General and some other, you know, slightly, it's like more of a dynasty than an elected or an elected official type of deal, but it is what it is. So the U.S.-Soviet relations were not that great either. This same year, there was a summit about nuclear weapons testing, amongst other things, where the new leader of the Soviet Union, because Stalin just died, so there's this guy, Nikita Khrushchev. Khrushchev?
I have a bad time
saying his name.
Yeah, Nikita Khrushchev.
He was like the opposite to Kennedy. So Kennedy was this playboy, right? Like he was a Manhattan socialite. He knew everybody. He hung out with Frank Sinatra. He smoked cigars.
Oh, yeah. He
lovely pictures, you know.
He
like,
served in World War
II. He's a fucking ladies' man,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he served. He, like, had a boat thing in World War II. He wasn't, like, a fucking frontline soldier or anything, but that's where he fucked up his back was he was pulling some buddies from drowning with a rope with his teeth across the lake. But that doesn't matter so much as this guy was like a playboy, you know, the modern term we'd use now, at least when I was in high school. It's like a fuckboy, right? You know, the slick back hair and everything.
Fuckboy JFK. I like
Nikita Khrushchev, the leader of the Soviet Union, he was like a fucking shoemaker in a factory before the revolution happened in the 20s.
Oh, yeah, he went through.
Like, he was a nobody. And then because of the way communism turned social norms over there on its head, all of a sudden, he's the leader. And so when they went to this summit, this Khrushchev guy just raked Kennedy over the coals. And it's come later in writings, but you could even tell then that this Khrushchev guy thought Kennedy was weak. And it's miscalculations like that that get people killed. And in this case, we're playing games with nuclear warheads, right?
Yeah, the...
So that's kind of the stage where the U.S. is they have a sort of weak-looking leader. they just fucked up and failed, like, this weird covert invasion in Cuba. Like, we're not looking too great. Like, this is height of CIA doing weird fucked up shit. Like, MK Ultra was in full swing right now. Like,
yeah, and just to give a little bit of, just a little bit more on the whole US and USSR stuff, right after the end of World War II, we went at each other, basically, like, trying to grab as much European land from the Soviets. And so, of course, Germany was split in two. They got east, we got west. And so that was a big deal. Of course, Korea was backed by Soviet and China. That happened in the 50s. That was another communism.
The Korean Civil War.
Yeah, that was another. It was like a communism proxy war, as I call, you know, stuff like that. But
it was actually called a police action, coined by a writer.
Yeah,
Truman didn't know what to call it. And the writer goes, what, is this some kind of police action? And yeah, then sure. In every U.S. publication since, it was a police action. You know, the only reason the UN was a part of that is because the Soviets were boycotting the UN at the time.
That makes sense.
Yep. Otherwise, it would have had to be like an American action, like Vietnam was.
And then, of course, you have the Better Red Than Dead stuff. So, which is
the Big Red Scare.
Yeah, the Big Red Scare, which happened around this time as well. So, America was very anti-communism. And this is like
the communists were very anti-American.
Oh yeah, they were. So we were very much like buttonheads, and I mean, of course, a couple of years later is the Vietnam War, which is, you know, us versus Soviet-backed Vietnam,
NVA, and
yeah, whatnot,
Viet Cong.
But to say that you know we weren't friends with Russia, so
yeah, we weren't particularly tight. I do think it's fair to mention that, like, okay, so we're here. Let me get back on our little timeline.
There, you're good.
So in 1961, we failed at. But what we succeed at is putting our ballistic missiles in Turkey and in Italy, which, if you know what a map looks like, that's, like, right on the doorstep of what used to be the Soviet Union. And this was a time different than now. Nowadays, you can shoot a missile from fucking center of America, right from fucking Kansas, and land it wherever you want on the globe, right? We have the tech to do that now.
Yeah.
But in the 60s, that didn't exist. That came around in the 70s and the 80s. And so at that time, you kind of had to put your missiles close to the bad guy. Like, if you wanted to have them, like, ready to go or whatever, we couldn't just fucking shoot across the world.
Yeah.
So
missile technology was a lot different.
We put him there, and as a result, this Khrushchev guy met with Castro to, in secret, put ballistic missiles in Cuba, right? Like, we have a gun down their throat, they want a gun down ours.
Which, by the way, Fidel Castro, communist leader of Cuba, at the time, Cuba was communist, and they had a long leading tie back to Russia and whatnot. Fidel Castro was like,
they were like the little brother.
Yeah, Fidel Castro had like a love for Soviet Russia and
Soviet communism. That guy, like, really believed in the cause.
I'm just gonna throw this out there real quick, just as a real quick tidbit. Fidel Castro, you know, communist leader of Cuba, we tried to assassinate that man 600 and something times.
And we failed every one of them.
And the last one that we did was in 2000. We tried to put explosives in his podium where he was going to, you know, have a speech.
But he died in 2016, by the way.
Yeah, we did. He has a quote saying, where was it at? We did everything from prostitutes to
poison cigars.
Yeah,
put a fucking, like, a neat seashell, like, on the beach and rig it with explosives. Like, that's an actual thing we
did. Yeah, we literally did everything. Fidel Castro came out and said, if surviving assassinations was an Olympic sport, I'd have a gold medal.
Which, anyway, this is one of those things where if you think God looks after the good guys, maybe, right? Like, maybe we're not the good guys here. Like,
you know, Yeah, we tried a lot. We really didn't like Fidel Castro at all because we really didn't like communism being so close to our front door, being right off the coast of Florida, and, you know, stuff like that.
Well, they were making us look bad. Like, they were succeeding at communism. Like, the Soviet Union had its issues, but Cuba was doing fucking great.
Yeah, but yes,
they reorganized. They stopped people from starving. The issues you see now, where they like all have to drive old cars and they're all poor, are because of U.S. sanctions. Like, that's pretty well our fault.
634 assassination schemes or attempts. Yep, there you go.
And so this Castro guy, this Khrushchev guy, were like, "Let's build a fucking missile, right?" And we were spying on everybody, and they were spying on everybody, and you know what the U2 is?
Yeah, U2 spy plane.
Exactly.
Yeah. Multiple controversies.
Yeah. They weren't even great. That's the funny thing, right? Like, they're just like mid-ass planes that could kind of go up high, and then they'd get shot down all the time.
Yeah, they got shot down. Oh, fooling.
So they're like, all right, we're going to build some missiles. And they thought it would be wise to do it in secret, right? Like, we can't just fucking build a nuclear arsenal off the coast of the U.S. without them, like, doing something about it. So they're going to do it in secret. And they sort of succeed for a while. But, as I was saying, we had, like, this network of spy coverage all over the U.S. And you know, it was something we were very apt and keen on, was to keep an eye on Cuba. And we found, in the middle of them building these silos, which are like an underground tube that you put a missile in and it houses it, right? It keeps it ready to fire. And so they were building these silos. Notably, they didn't have missiles yet on the island. And we were like, oh, fuck. So Kennedy creates the Executive Committee of the National Security Council, which has the coolest fucking name ever, by the way. It's XCOM.
No, it's just so funny. I'm not a video game. Anyways.
Yeah, right? Like the alien one?
Where's Matthew at? He'd go crazy.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But we found this shit in October, right?
Yeah, because we used a U-2 spy plane.
Yep. We saw him. We took pictures. Kennedy's like, fuck! And so, at this time, and this, in my opinion, is actually the craziest part of the story, not what's to come, because what's to come is, like, the brink of us going into nuclear war. But at this time, in 1962, when this is happening, October of 1962, there wasn't, like, a way to talk to the leaders of other nations. Like, if you imagine in those movies there was the red phone, or like, you ever watch Doctor Strangelove, they pick up the phone and they call the Russian president or whatever, right?
Yeah, they like have a direct line.
Yeah, that didn't exist.
No.
There was no way to fucking communicate.
Yeah, there was no direct line. I mean, yeah, sure.
Kennedy went on the fucking TV and goes, "We found your shit."
The man's balls were, you know, that one South Park deal where he's walking around with him in a fucking wheelbarrow.
And we're like, all right, we have to fucking quit this, right? And so what he did was he created a quarantine, air quotes here. So what they did was, it's a blockade. That's all it was. It's a blockade. But a blockade is an act of war. So we use the word quarantine and pretend it wasn't, right?
Yeah, no, we fucking blockaded the fuck out of them. We put
a bunch of U.S. Navy ships in a big ass circle around that fucking island, man.
Yeah, and not only were they just I believe they were nuclear toting, American warships as well.
Oh yeah, it was wartime vessels, man.
Yeah, we weren't fucking around.
Actually, I'm not so sure about that. I don't know. They very well might have been, but
here, you keep going. I'll get some more information on that blockade real quick, because I gotta know.
And so we go, that's cool and all, but we can't let you do that, right? And I would like to mention this is right after we fucking did that to them in the Italy and Turkey thing. So we said, fuck it, we're putting a blockade, And what's incredible, dude, is this was live. So the date we found out to the date it was resolved was the 16th to the 28th of October, 1962. That's 12 days. And so for 12 days straight, the entire world wasn't sure if they were going to wake up in the morning, because the Soviets had boats, probably, and we're not sure, but probably had the missiles on them, coming to put them on Cuba, and this blockade was going to stop them, right? And if an American ship fired on a Soviet ship, that's war, right?
Yep.
And if war broke out, that's a nuclear exchange, and a nuclear exchange means game over for everybody. So for 12 straight days, the entire fucking world just didn't know if they were going to wake up, didn't know if their family would die, didn't know if their kids would get to see the light of tomorrow. Like, I imagine it was a rather palpable fear. And what happened was, eventually, these ships came, and it's insane because, it, like, on CBS or whatever, it was just, like, a paper-drawn, like a hand-drawn map, and they'd move these little paper images of boats as they got closer
to they were just like, hey,
the blockade, right? Like, so be like, hey, the ships are getting closer. And we didn't know it at the time. And we meaning civilians, let me say it that way. But
yeah.
We didn't know at the time, but Kennedy and Khrushchev were just like, all right, fuck it, let's send some letters. You know, like, they're fucking, they're snail mailing, they're sending shit over the wire. They're like, hey, we know you're a spy, can you get this message to him, like, now? Like, that kind of shit, right? Like, fucking, like, we just fucking threw in all the hats. We're like, we gotta talk this thing out before the world ends, right? And after several days of negotiations, when the boats finally got there, and they got there, the Soviet boats, right as they were within line of sight of the American ships, they turned around. And what the world didn't know was Khrushchev decided that a couple of days ago, but he didn't want to look weak for as long as possible. And so then the world was saved, but what actually caused them to turn around was the negotiations that publicly the Soviets would dismantle their weapons in Cuba and return them to the Soviet Union.
And right? We would do the same in Turkey, correct?
Yeah, but that was in private. We didn't want the world to know that.
Yeah, God forbid.
Yep. And eventually by November, things were solved. Apparently bombers were like in the sky above Cuba, like they're like Russian bombers and stuff.
The Ilyushin 8, I believe, which had the, it's the equivalent of the American B-52 essentially, because we were standing at the ready as well. We had multiple airfields ready with the
B-52. Yeah, dude, we would just like circle fucking the Arctic like all the time, right? Like we just have some planes chilling up there, ready to go whenever. And then as a result of this terrible fucking thing, we finally got the hotline from Washington to Moscow built. And that little terrifying incident is how the world nearly fucking ended.
Holy shit. 23 nuclear armed B-52s were sent to orbit of points within striking distance of the Soviet Union.
Oh, we were about to go to war, man.
Oh, DEFCON 2. That was the highest level of, you're right, it goes backwards. So that is the highest level of DEFCON the U.S. government has ever seen, was DEFCON 2 during this time. We were that close to DEFCON 1, which is full-on nuclear war.
And think about that shit. The world was going to end, and these people couldn't even try to talk it out.
No,
like, they're writing fucking letters, dude. It's insane.
Yeah, no, we were like a couple button presses, or just literally someone could have came over a radio and told, you know, because we were so hyped up on B-52s and whatnot in an airport, all we had to do was say, yeah, go ahead, and boom, it's over.
It's absurd, and that's so horrifying to me. Like, I know we have probably bigger bombs now. You know, we probably have things beyond our comprehension that are also equally likely to end the world and whatnot. But goddamn, dude, people nearly watch that shit live. Like,
oh yeah. I wonder how many nuclear submarines. So I have a big thing with like nuclear submarines too. Like if you watch the movie Hunt for the Red October and stuff. It's another big one that I...
Which is fucking crazy, dude. They made a fucking a submarine the size of an aircraft carrier. Like, what the fuck?
And it just decided that it was going to come over here. But, yeah, of course we had multiple nuclear submarines too, which that is another scary thing too, that whenever it has to deal with nuclear war and stuff, that at any point we have, and it's not known. No one knows except for the higher ups in the U.S. government where all of our nuclear submarines are. But
they're probably fucking everywhere, right? Like, that's the goal.
But,
you'd imagine.
It's just, you know, kind of crazy that how fast we could respond. I mean, look how fast we respond to the attacks in, was it Yemen? And currently right now and stuff like that, us rolling up half of our fucking fleet to the edge, like, hey, you want to fuck around and find out? We did the same thing to North Korea, I believe, under the under Obama. They threatened us, and we rolled up like three of our aircraft carriers off to the coast of North Korea. I'm like, hey, you want to try it?
Sorry about the background noise. I had a water bottle fuck up.
It's just kind of crazy, though, at any point, how quick a response our military can be at any threat, whether it's, you know, at the time, the Soviets, or, you know, current times, it's, you know, North Korea and whatnot.
Yeah, and I'd like to talk for a second on the, I guess I've been talking this whole time.
There you go.
But I want to talk for a second about the moral implications of this, right? Like, ever since we invented and then proved that we would use it on another man, the atomic and later nuclear bomb, like, we began walking a tightrope, right? And this tightrope is, can humans go for forever without nuking ourselves for oblivion? Because any time before that, like, major powers going to war was like a fucking Thursday. Like, this shit would happen all the time. Like, you had England and France going at it, like, all the time. Those were two world powers. Those were heavy hitters. The First World War was the heaviest of all hitters going at it, right? And that was fucking routine, right? And then all of a sudden we make this bomb, and it's like, if that ever happens again, we lose. We finish the experiment of life on Earth, right? Like, we have to keep walking this tightrope, you know, and some people say, well, that's why you need to, like, expand to other planets or whatever. But we're, like, fucking generations away from, like, sustainably having, you know, life on other planets under their own power, so to speak. And it's like, can we do it? Like, we can't even, like in the U.S. right now, right? Like, we can't even get along. Like, no, routine shit, basic issues, you know, and this is going to get vaguely political, but I just mean, like, there's no underground foundation, at least to me, that people seem to recognize, and I think it exists, and I think it's, like, intrinsic to human life. It's, like, this foundation of unity, right? Like, I think all human beings are created equal and are given... the Founding Fathers called it unalienable rights, but one could argue they're just human rights, like the right to exist and the right to, like, try to thrive and to have a family, right? Like, you should have the right to breed and you know, like, just, like, normal fucking human shit. The right to love, the right to be happy, right? And some people, I don't know. It's not a modern thing. It's a very old thing. But, like, they pick on the differences instead of the similarities, and it's just the stakes are too high.
Oh yeah, it's just crazy that at any point all of it could be taken away in a moment's notice.
It'd be our own fucking fault. That's the worst part of it, probably, right? Like, getting wiped out by the aliens who are testing a bomb, fucking, you know, two galaxies away, and it's a little too big. Well, I guess we're shit out of luck, but the likelihood of that happening over us killing ourselves, I don't know. I think we screw up before something crazy like that.
Yeah, whether it's, you know, of course we don't test nuclear weapons anymore. So
we publicly don't. I'm sure publicly. There's, like, some underground chambers and shit where we're up to shit, but.
The deal is like, you know, it's crazy how many wars we've been through too. Like, within the past 100 years, the amount of battles we've been fighting is just crazy to me, too, whether it's from World War I all the way up until, you know, The war in Afghanistan.
I'll give you something different.
I like this.
How about how few wars we're fighting?
That
how you know, about that's a, like
that's, you know you
sure there's a couple right and they're really well documented especially because they're recent but like what about fucking 100 200 years ago right like in 1800 or fuck it we'll start at the American Revolution going to like the end of Napoleon like the late 1800s. That's like a fucking 1,000 wars. Like, oh, yeah. Dude, they just kept going. Spanish-American, 100 years, 1812, American Revolution, French Revolution, fucking all the European revolutions, fucking, like, left, right, and center. And then now it's like, we kind of got to get our act right. I don't know. That's one lens. But the lens that, like, we just keep fighting for no fucking reason is also perfectly true. Like, why did we go to Afghanistan at all? Why did the Soviets do it before us? Why does at the end of Rocky II they call the Mujahideen the good guys? Just like questions like that.
Say Rocky II?
Yeah. At the end of the Rocky II, it says this movie is like in respect to the brave fighters of the Mujahideen because at the time they were fighting the Soviet Union, right?
No, you mean Rocky III.
Mean Rocky III?
Yeah, you mean Rocky III. Rocky II is where he fights Mr. T. And then Rocky III is when he fights, Drago.
Mujahideen, Rambo, and the move.
Or is it Rambo? You said Rocky.
Rambo. Rambo III is what I'm thinking of. Yeah. I'm fucking stupid. Anyways, sorry. American movie about America being good as Mujahideen good guys, what we later called the bad guys at the end.
Now, if you ever watch Rambo and you're like, damn, we did the right thing, you didn't watch that movie well enough. Like, not to get political about the Vietnam War and stuff, but if you ever sat down and watched, like, Rocky 1 and then Rocky 2, First Blood, you did not watch, or did I say Rocky again? Rocky, Rambo, both have Sylvester Stallone in them. But, yeah, there is... Especially Rocky or Rambo 1, in the talks of him coming back from Vietnam, and the just how we looked at Vietnam veterans coming back, fighting a war they didn't want to fight, and stuff like that. I could go on about the Vietnam War and stuff. I won't. But if you ever watch Rambo 1, Rambo 2, Rambo 2 First Blood Part 1, Part 2. If you ever watch those movies and you were like, damn, we were on the right side of things, you did not watch those movies close enough. So that's the main thing that I'm going to say, because those two movies are just, they're sad.
Yep.
It's a good portrayal. Rocky 1's a good portrayal of how we treated our veterans coming back from the Vietnam War.
We talked about this before, but like a very good modern example is American Sniper.
If we get in the war movie side of it, if you ever sat down and watch a war movie,
either like propaganda or like halfway realistic depiction. We don't get real depictions of war
now,
like
it doesn't exist, but the good depictions of a good war movie always make you think that we should not have been doing any of that, whether it's Rambo, whether it's Saving Private Ryan.
Okay, see, here's the funny thing. Okay. Right? Like, fighting the Nazis, we are obviously the good guys. But the best part about that is we didn't know about the Holocaust side of things until, like, late in the game.
No, we had to go out and find those the concentration camps.
Dude, imagine if we did all of World War II and Germany was just another country.
See, I think one of the best depictions of the U.S. finding concentration camps comes from Band of Brothers. And how it's like the last episode of Band of Brothers, and they come upon a concentration camp, and they were just befuddled. They couldn't believe what had been going on and what they were fighting. The same can be said about the Pacific. The Pacific is another...
The Pacific's a little different, because like, they were doing that like right in front of their face, the fucking mutilating people, putting body parts in mouths and slapping babies on fucking... I'll stop there, but like, very bad.
Yeah, no.
No, that was very public. The Japanese were the bad guys. There's no...
Yeah, there wasn't any way around that one. Same one with the Nazis, but... Which, I mean, the German... The fancy emblem peoples.
Why are we needing this word?
I don't know. I don't know if it'll get struck by...
Well, fuck it, dude. I'd rather talk shit about Nazis than get a paycheck.
Fuck you em. Got a point. You got a point. But, yeah. Yeah, it's just... War is hell. It's basically what I guess I was going to try to point at. You know,
and, we nearly ended the world over some petty bullshit. But that's all I got for today, man. I think we'll make this a short one.
Yep.
This is a two-thirds episode for sure.
But we'll be back next time with more cryptids and, you know, government conspiracy theories.
MKL. We just got to throw in a heavy one every now and then, man. You got to hit him with the right hook, you know.
Yeah, just right out of nowhere. And I want to do another shout-out to Vidith because he shouted us out on a live stream. And we got some more followers coming in from Vidith's stuff. So I'd like to say a shout-out for him when they just come over from Vidith's stuff.
That's really sweet.
It was really nice of him, and we really like everyone that comes over and, you know, watches the videos and hangs out, makes a comment. So we read every single one of your comments, too.
Oh, do you got any for today? I'm not signing on this PC. Here. I need the credentials again. Sorry, that's totally not part of this, but...
I'll send it to you later. But,
I found him.
But we got guys like... Okay, we'll start with Wicked Justice. I've listened to you since... I've listened to you three since episode one on Spotify. First time on YouTube, but I love y'all, gents. Don't fucking stop. Shout out to you, Wicked Justice. We got Crystal Kaiser, just found from Vidit's stream. Looking forward to listening to the episodes. And we also have, I think, two of our top just people that are always commenting. We have Winged Horse. Winged Horse has been around for a while.
We love Winged. Let's go. And then
Haley Clark. Haley Clark has been just telling us how great our channel is.
Fucking top just dog right every, there. Top dog, dude. I like it. That's what we're going to call these fellas. Yeah. Top dogs.
If we ever have a Patreon, our top Patreons are top dogs.
We'll see.
But yeah, Haley Clark, shout out to you. Winged Horse, shout out to you. I still love that a month ago we had a comment by We Are Not the FBI. It's still one of my favorite comments.
Big fan. But hey, that's all for this week of the Barkin' Boys. Sorry we missed one. You know, shit happens. I could have talked for, I don't know, 10 minutes about calculus or something, but you wouldn't have liked that, you know? So, anyways, that's all from me.
Y'all take it easy. Get ready for hopefully the next episode next week. We should all three be back together. And, yeah. So y'all have a good... Bye.